You are listening to Been There, Done That. We present some of the smartest people connected to the business of coffee. People who've succeeded in the tough grind of hospitality by staying ahead of the rest. So join us as we explore the secrets to their success and help you accelerate your business. This show is brought to you by the Coffee Commune, where the coffee community comes to collaborate. Enjoy the show.
Hi everybody, this is Phil DiBella and I bring to you today a special edition of Been There, Done That, where I interview people that have been there, done that, have amazing, invaluable experience that we want them to share around specific topics to all of our listeners in the space of hospitality. The special event today is International Women's Day. I got to interview the formidable Lauren Hall, the founder and managing director of a company called Ivy that is in over 100 countries around the world. It's an events SaaS product that is just growing and doing amazing things. And what I wanted to share with the listeners today is my interview with her on International Women's Day, where we discussed all things around vision, resilience, being the best you can be, and what makes people stand out in a crowd. So please enjoy the interview from Lauren Hall and myself on International Women's Day. Well, it gives me great pleasure to introduce Lauren. A little bit of background around Lauren Hall. Entrepreneur, CEO, and founder of Ivy. Do you know what Ivy does? You should have done your research. Serial entrepreneur, started her first company at 17. It was only 10 years ago, wasn't it, Lauren? And built five multi-million dollar companies across manufacturing, pharmaceuticals, FMCG, technology in South Africa, and now Australia. Ivy is a global product. We're going to hear a bit more about it. Highly skilled executive with 25 years of business management and board experience. Has raised over $30 million in capital. There's an art to that. Built and managed teams across six countries and scaled businesses into more than 18 countries. So we have what I've been saying, one of Australia's best female speakers for these events in International Women's Day. And that's not taking away anything from any other female. But you be the judge when we finish in the next, say, 45 minutes. 60 minutes when you hear this lady's remarkable journey and her story. She's globally recognized as an entrepreneur, innovator, over 40 awards in her field across many different multiples of what she does. Now, something you might not know, don't piss her off because her superpower is Taekwondo. You're looking at somebody who's competed on the world global stage of Taekwondo. We might be sitting a bit too close if I upset you. Her passion is coffee. I don't know if she was just being nice, but your passion is really around creating businesses and being creative and people. And her pet hate, this is why we get on so well, is mediocrity and complacency, which is not good for anybody. Please join me in welcoming Lauren Hall.
Thanks, Phil. Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me. It's wonderful to be able to be engaged and see all of you today.
Well, let's get straight into it because I'd write questions, but we could go anywhere with this, as you know. But there's two specific questions I do want to ask knowing your wonderful story. I want you to share a specific moment of your journey where you faced significant adversity and how did you overcome it and build your business today?
Thanks, Phil. I suppose it actually has to go back a little bit in time to give you a little bit of background around the journey and how I got into the position I did. I built my first tech company in South Africa, wanting to be able to revolutionize the meetings and events industry. Bootstrapped that company for a couple of million and found out I hit a force majeure moment where I had this enormous banking client that wanted to roll out our platform into 30,000 people. Now, going back to 2006 is when I built it. AWS and Big Server environments didn't actually exist at the time. It was built in ASP Classic, which is a language that didn't scale because it wasn't a serverless environment to be able to scale software solutions. So I went to the Industrial Development Council of South Africa. Now, as you would have known from 1994, South Africa was under Black Empowerment Rule. Okay, so ANC was the new government. And as a white woman, I was really at the bottom of the food chain for any sort of funding or allocation of any grants. And if you didn't build your own business and fund it, you had no access to any support from the government. And so anyway, I went through this Industrial Development Council of South Africa, which was a major area of development for innovation in South Africa. I was the first white woman under ANC rule to win 10 million for the because of the national benefits my tech would actually bring the country. However, I'd gone through a lot of very huge trauma over the many years prior with the loss of my father to murder, which I witnessed, and multiple attacks in my family that led to the loss of life. And within 2 days of being awarded the 10 million for funding, after 5 years of applying to Australia, I got a visa saying, so I had the choice between 10 million and life. And I chose life. And I walked away from 10 million after having invested every single thing I owned to build this tech because I believed so deeply in changing the world. And 2 weeks later, I picked up my husband, my two young boys, and I got on an aeroplane and I handed my keys to my maid and I said goodbye to my family. And I left and I arrived on the Gold Coast with no money, no job, no network, and I started again. What I had, and probably part of that, this journey is to talk about, to be kind of like a beacon of hope, because if you have nothing, you have nothing else to lose other than life. And to start again, it is, you only have yourself to be able to help drive and deliver, because that's all you have, you and your husband, and you have to make money. I didn't even have enough money to pay the school fees, okay? When honestly, when I arrived here and I say, I was dead broke. Okay. And I think answering the question about, well, what did you do to overcome adversity? Well, firstly, the most empowering moment of that decision was choosing the most important thing to me was family over money. And the one thing I could guarantee you was safety for my children, because I couldn't do that in South Africa. And the next step was for me was, well, okay, I'm now in the Gold Coast. I have no money. I bet get door knocking, okay? And all I did was I started door knocking like a salesman. This is who I am. This is what I needed. And I found a woman who was an ad agency that introduced me to a young guy who would allow me to be able to say, go and speak to this guy who can consult. He can probably help you, because as a South African woman and then as an alpha female, I terrified the absolute pants off her, okay? And she couldn't wait to get me out her door. Okay, because it was exactly what I was, and I thought, well, this is Australia. I have to make it happen. I need to make money. I'd built four companies at that time, and I had nothing to show for it. But I was really not the most employable person because I was widely skilled, had built businesses. Well, where do I start? Anyway, overcoming adversity is a really important thing. Because I had this dream of changing the industry, I had built up a PowerPoint presentation and I went to the largest hotel group in Australia, being Mantra, if you guys all know, they're now bought by Accor. And I pitched this deck in front of them and I said, well, this is what I'm going to build. This is what I'd like you to be able to partner with me. And the executive team turned around and said, well, Lauren, what you're wanting to build is a Ferrari and what we ride is a bicycle, okay? And I said, I like fast cars, come for a ride, okay? And I landed up in this space of time was I got a legal contract signed. I leveraged that legal contract to go find a technical co-founder. And I found a way to be able to get some funding, knocked on the door of a cousin that I'd never met. And he seeded my company for $250,000 and off I went with saying, I now have some money and I can get out the block. Hence going through adversity, well, you have nothing. You have to fight for everything you believe in. And you are going to be given so many different lessons in life to overcome adversity. And you have to take them on board. You have to take those challenges. And you just have to believe in yourself and back yourself. And then the most important thing out of that whole journey that I've learned over the last 15 years is build the best team. Have people that believe in you. Because if you do have the right people that back you, the right team, the right capital, the right community, you can do anything. And I am absolute proof of it.
I love it. See, you're easy to interview, right? Mm-hmm. Most of you have been to these events. I would have been talking by now. I don't need to with you. So let's unpack a key takeaway for me there is get comfortable with your worst case scenario. Your worst case scenario was losing family, which you had already lost enough and you didn't want to lose your immediate family, being your kids and your husband. So key takeaway there for you guys is obviously get comfortable with your worst case scenario. When you're faced with that adversity, what's the worst thing that can possibly happen? And when you're comfortable or not comfortable, that's where you come at a crossroad to make a decision. The other one is one of vision, is you had a vision. You had a clear vision of what you want and need to achieve. The amount of people I see in business today that don't have a vision, if you don't have a vision, you don't know where you're heading. And then the other one is get on your bike and pedal, make shit happen. The amount of people we all come across that talk but don't do. And my dad brought me up as a young son of migrants saying, son, talk as much as you want, just do more than what you talk and you'll never fail. Yeah. And to unpack the three takeaways for me from that, that's what it is. You had to get comfortable with your worst case scenario. You had clear vision and you got on and did the work. You talked, but you did more than what you talked. Talk us through, and to get through, obviously, seeing loved ones pass away and the rest of it, resilience. Give us your tips on resilience.
Look, I think as most founders, anybody leading any form of organization or building any sort of solution, let alone, it doesn't matter what you're doing, resilience is a fundamental backbone of you being successful, because 95% of people fail 5% before the finish line, okay? And what is interesting is all startups fail within the first 5 years, okay? And that level of resilience and tenacity and perseverance has to be in your DNA. If it's not, don't start, because you will. The worst thing you can do is set yourself up for failure. Be prepared to give it everything you've got. Back yourself, believe yourself. But if you don't get up there, stand up, show up, and lead, because people are there to believe in you, you need to be that example, okay? And resilience, let me tell you something, is going to test you every single day of your entrepreneurial journey, because there are many, many dark days that founders and CEOs have in their journey of success, because sometimes you feel like you're walking through the valley of death and you see no way out. And you have to find that fight in within you to dig deep and stand there and lead your people, because you know that you have the North Star. You know where you're going. Sometimes the journey does this. It's not always a straight line. And you have to make sure that, you know, and sometimes that you have to have the people. I think your family play a big role. They see you strong during the day and come back broken, because they have to pick up the broken pieces every day and then make sure that you're back together the next day, because it is a natural part of building a business. And I think resilience is something that actually builds an incredible sense of strength in your character. I think the fact that there are so many levels that you have to have along that journey to show, well, I'm not going to give up, that will of indomitable spirit, that fight. And my team, and I'm very fortunate to have a couple of my execs and my EA here who are just awesome, know that fighting spirit is what I live and breathe every single day. And I think for any woman or man, resilience is what determines your success and failure. Because if you don't keep pushing through those boundaries, you will always have obstacles. You will always have crisis. You will always have setbacks, okay? If you don't have that resilience and perseverance, you won't see it through to the finish line. And therefore, lean on people around you who have been through things that can help give you that motivation, because my God, there are many days you need that shoulder to cry on, okay? I don't cry very often, but I tell you something, there are those days that you just have to lean on people around you. And the best thing you can do is have a great tribe, because the more you lead with resilience and determination and strength and a will to never give up, the more the people around you will follow you, support you, and help you through to success. Because remember, as a founder, you're not there for yourself, you're there for everyone else.
Yeah, it's good points, isn't it? Because, you know, it really is telling when people say, I'm passionate about something. Well, to me, true passion is resilience. If you're really passionate and you've always been passionate about businesses and now you're onto your fifth, it's showing up and continuing to show up. You know, I say to my kids, if you're truly passionate about something, then you don't give up. You get knocked down, you get back up and you keep going. And then one of the things that really you talk a lot about and have already is people. Tell us, what's the true art of keeping, in your experience, good people around you? And that's not just people at work, is it? No. That's good family, good, you know, as you say, tribe is people that you've got in your friendship circle, in your family, but also at work.
You know, I think that is probably my biggest lesson in life. It is, and it's, honestly, I think through any journey that I've had, finding the right people makes the difference, without hands down. And I think the most important thing is aligning the people in your team, in your circles, to your values, okay? So many times you choose people that you think will work well with you because they've got the skills, but they're not aligned to your values. And that increases conflict, the higher risk of failure. There are so many things that cause the failure if that alignment's not in place. Trust, loyalty, integrity, respect. And when you have a policy or a belief system that everybody that you recruit on, well, your ability to be successful is so much higher because you all know where you're going, you all know how to operate, and you're aligned to where you should be in terms of your operations. And then you think about that from your everyday business. When you think about your partners and your friends and your family and the people around you, you want to know people that you can learn from, that also when you talk to, you have respect for, you are encouraged by them, that also have your back, because there's nothing greater than people in your circles that also play a very, very big role in your success. And aligning yourself with those that are not just lip service. And I have to say that I don't do lip service very well. I don't like women that constantly socialize themselves and think that they have to pay to get themselves on the front of a magazine, because it's this. Evidence and action speak louder than pretty pictures and being put into the social market, because everything you do in life, it's about building credibility. If you win an award, it's not for you. It's to build trust in the market because they believe in you and you do it on behalf of your team. And it's the same as anything with your value system. They need to be aligned. That's what it is. It's building. You only have one thing in life, and that's your reputation. You lose it, it's gone forever. So align those people in your team. And I'm blessed that I have learned that along my journey. And I have the most awesome rock star team that I tell you I get up every day for. And without them, and I say, Ivy wouldn't be where it is today.
Yeah, well said. It really is about values alignment, isn't it? And the values start with yourself. I mean, people talked about when we had DiBella Coffee and grew to the biggest company in the country in our space. People said, why is your team so amazing? And I said, because they're aligned with the vision, they're aligned with the values, and they're here because they want to be here. Yeah. And you touched on something that's dear to me, which is brand. Brand is what people say about you when you're not in the room. And you smashed on it. It's what people don't say about you when you're not in the room. Yeah. And what will they talk about? Your values, they'll talk about your vision, they'll talk about how you make them feel, which is so important. So good segue into vision. Tell me, what's the vision with Ivy?
You know, I have big dreams. Those things known as the hairy, audacious goals, as my team all know. I definitely have always had a vision that Ivy would one day be a billion-dollar market cap company. The reason I built Ivy was because I was thrown into the events industry by default, okay? And I was doing brand strategy for very large corporations, and people would turn around and go, oh, how fantastic could this be? Can you just, you've done a great job here, can you just launch it for us? And I went, how hard's an event? I was not trained as an event manager. It is not my skill set. And I thought to myself, well, you know what? It's got to be a great experience, leave memorable takeaways, and make sure you deliver on the expectations. And I thought, well, that's great project management. Okay. Well, little did you know, I'm doing it in Africa, a third world country. I'm launching a very large multinational and international events, and did them really well. But what a learning. That was the fact that all I wanted to do was sit in front of a computer and say, I'm looking for a venue for 500 people on the 18th to 20th of November with three breakout rooms and $100 a head so that I could actually get live instant bookings. That was not possible, because organizing an event, the one thing you learn, it is time consuming, labor intensive, and manual. Because if you wanted to book a venue, what do? You pick up the phone, you know somebody around the corner, you know your local, or you go to a directory, and that is typically what happened, is it spent time backwards and forwards, and it would literally take 6 weeks to organize, contract, secure, supply chain, and get the event to market. And I thought there had to be an easier way. So I wanted to build a booking engine that would enable the live connection between the supply chain and the buyer so that you could instantly search, book, and pay for a venue online and the peripheral supply chain. But, oh my God, what a journey. the obstacles and the challenges that have been thrown to me every single day. But I didn't stop believing that I could change this industry and change the world of events. And it has taken incredible resilience and perseverance. Most people would have given up a long time ago. But the vision for Ivy was to be a global single point of a solution. We're obviously very focused on venues providing live inventory to manage space and to connect that inventory online to thousands of different buyers across the globe. It has been a very big journey. And I think for my vision hasn't changed to be that single point of end-to-end transaction flow from lead to inquiry to booking to automate what that process of 6 weeks is down to 6 minutes. Now, to do that, you have to have a value chain on both sides. How do you be able to manage that process for an event organizer? And how do you manage that lead to conversion for venues? So we had to build software on both sides and the middle ground booking engine. So it's been a big journey. It hasn't changed. The way we've had to manage to get into different markets has changed. Our markets that we focused and learned about great product fit and the perfect sweet spot for us has been also a journey. And now the foundations and the growth is just set for unlimited opportunities.
So it was a 42-kilometer marathon. How far into the journey?
At a sprint pace, okay?
How far are you in? You're 10 Ks in, 20 Ks in?
I'd say I'm 100 Ks in, but I'm 1,000 Ks away, okay? It's like it's never ending. It's just never ending. But I do believe you have to have this incredible belief around the journey. I think often we focus so much on the destination and forget to really enjoy the journey.
Yeah.
And as much as I have this great destination of where it may potentially be, whether I get there or not, the most important thing is I can continue to grow and deliver and lead and change the world that we operate in and to make a difference, because that's the reason why I'm here. I believe my truth is make a difference, because if you don't, you know, what have you got to show for your journey in life here? You live one life.
Yeah. In the spirit of the female theme, you've got two boys. If you had a girl, what would be the advice that you'd be telling a 15-year-old girl right now who's in the middle of, you know, thinking about their vision, their life, their aspirations?
Yeah, all I can say is thank God I had boys. Because the reality is I've been such a tomboy my whole life that I thought I was never the girly girl. But giving any advice to any young woman, I think the most important thing is that she leads by example. And I think that when you're making any decisions, make sure you have a strong belief in yourself, because you are so worthy. Most women struggle with confidence. They struggle believing in themselves, that they're not worthy of that journey or that success. And what I will tell my daughter, which hopefully will be a granddaughter, okay, my age, okay, will be is believe in yourself and back yourself. Because the minute you stop doing that, other people will not believe in you. So for me, that is the most important thing. And every day, get up believing you are worthy, because so many of us, and I am one of them, I've done this 5 times. I call myself a 5-time serial sucker, okay? Because I keep going and learning and building, because what have I done my whole life? I've tried to prove myself that I'm worthy. And it's the fight within me, not within anybody else, that I fight every single day to believe I'm worthy of where I am. I'm worthy of the journey I have. I'm worthy of the team and the people that believe in me. And it is saying the one thing that I would say is to leave off a young woman is, I am enough.
Yeah. Well said. Well said. It's as a father of a 16-year-old daughter, the two things we talk about is be independent and know that you're enough. And if you don't believe that you're enough, then you need to work out what it is you need and then lean on the resources around you. Because as a son of migrants, I can share a real quick story. My brother and sister were born in Italy, in Sicily. I was born in Australia. My brother's 13 years older and my sister's 11 years older. Now, I love my parents to death, but if I had to commentate on the way they parented was completely different with my brother and my sister.
Yeah.
And it was a migrant thing. And anyone that's in the audience, a son of migrants or a daughter of migrants would know this. There was different curfew times for the boy as there was for the girl. And how ironic, my brother never wanted to go out. My sister always wanted to go out. He had no curfew, she did. So you can imagine, here's me as a young boy then growing up and watching this fiasco take place, and an angry little Italian man who he loved dearly, but you would call him an angry Sicilian man, screaming at his daughter saying, no, you're not going out, and coming home at 1 o'clock in the morning. And the lesson I learned, and I reflect back on it, is that there is no rules that should be different for a male or a female. It should come back to values. Yeah. It should come back to independence. It's not my brother go to uni and my sister go and get a job in government. Yeah. And rightly or wrongly, right, that was the times then, but how much have the times changed, and thank God they have in a lot of ways. It's about independence. It is about having that vision. And so I resonate with what you say as a father of a 16-year-old daughter.
I might add to that because I think, you know, as I was talking to my team yesterday, I think the one thing that I strive for is being an equal opportunity company. Mm. And I've been privileged to participate in the EY and Deloitte's studies on women, okay, and the gender equality issues. And it's going to take, realistically, the research says 277 years before there is gender parity in wage. And I take a very, very strong view around equality in my workplace and in the people that operate within us. And believe it or not, less than 2.7% of women are funded worldwide. Less than 2.7% of women. But yet, it has been proven through the research that yet they deliver 63% greater return on investment from an economic impact. So there is something wrong with that equation, okay? And what I want to say is I say we all have a responsibility, man and woman, to pay it forward for our future generations and to champion change. And even if it is one single thing you do to help one other woman to take a step forward, where 50% of the world is female, the balance is men. If everybody just did one small thing, we would take an enormous leap for women in changing the way we operate. Yeah. So I cannot say how important that is in making sure that when you bring your kids up, there is no sex that is better than the other. It is about equal rights, equal opportunity, equal pay.
Well said, well said. We talked about it with Beck's team today, and I'm going to put something that you might or might not know in front of you. The importance of what Lauren said starts with both men and women. The men in the audience, I've never, and people have held me accountable, go, boss, you carry on about the rah-rah because you don't understand. You don't understand because you've never treated women any different to men. You've never paid women any less because they're women. You treat everyone the same. That's why you don't get that there's so much noise and needs to be so much noise out there. And I respected that my team held me accountable in that way because we don't know what we don't know. Because I can tell you now, a female CFO would get paid the same as a male CFO in my books and always have, especially when I had a team of 130 people, let alone now 35. Yet the Woolworths fiasco, I don't know whether you're aware or you're not aware, the outcoming CEO was on $2.7 million a year. The incoming CEO, who's female, accepted the role at $2.4 million a year. I read the thread and everybody in the thread's talking about how wonderful it is that a female got employed into the role, to which I agree. But didn't they miss the point until I put the point up? Well, isn't it disgusting that the female has accepted a role $300,000 less than the male? She's going to do exactly the same job. Then she needs the responsibility of asking for the same money, and the people that are paying her less should be sacked because she's about to go into a role being paid the same. Now, you might find that controversial. My wife told me by text not to be controversial. I told her to go back to being silent. That works well. But the responsibility, to your point, Lauren, and I'd love your commentary on that, is exactly that, that there's a responsibility by men and females. Women need to know your worth and demand that worth and not accept anything under it. And men need to step up to the plate and ensure that they are valuing that.
100%. 100%. I think the biggest problem is it's one of those things that it's almost acceptable. And the reason is when a woman goes in for a job interview, she will under-promise and over-deliver. Mm. A man will walk into a room and he'll say, I can do this and I'm worth this. And sometimes, and be respectful, okay, not deliver. And what is interesting, it's just the approach that women have to believe they're worth it. Because when you look at a job or you lead a team, you have to believe that you are there for a reason and you can do the same job, if not better, okay? And you should be paid exactly the same. There should be no discrimination around that. The problem is women have to come through believing that. And it is an educational process, it's a generation process, and it is going to take time so that when women believe they go for the roles, that they are deserving of that and more, because they will, through evidence and data, deliver.
Yeah, and it is about the capability.
It is.
You know, I speak to a lot of people in different various roles and of boards and stuff like that across the, and I go, do you want to be sitting around this table as a board member because you're female or because you're the most capable person? And I haven't come across a woman yet that says, because I'm female. They all want to be chosen because of their capability, and so they should be. And I think we can speed up that 227-year progress if everyone's more conscious, and that goes for males and females, and especially if we're programming, because I don't just program my 16-year-old daughter, I'm programming my 14-year-old boy to make sure that he understands both sides of the ledger as well. Tell me, how do you balance determination with the adaptability of what happens in a business environment? Because I talk about it's personal, professional and family is what makes up all of our lives. So the determination's got to be there, and the drive and the vision for success. But when you've got other things going on as well, how do you find, share some of your tips about being adaptable. You've got a husband, you've got two boys, right? You're across the world growing a global business. You've got an amazing team. You've got aspirations. You've still got a long way to go to where you want to be. Talk through adaptability.
Look, I think with any position as a CEO and driving a global technology company, the most important thing is you have to adapt to ever-changing environments. I mean, there are so many curveballs that get thrown to you left, right, and center. You have to be nimble. You have to move quickly. But you have to be determined that direction that you're working, because global expansion, believe it or not, building a business is one thing. Scaling it is a completely different beast, okay? There is so much complexity, so much compliance, so many things you don't know going into new markets that you think you know, okay? And you learn and you pay the price. I think the biggest thing with determination is you have to have a common vision. And you have to have a well-executed plan and strategy. And you've got to have a great team to help you execute that step by step. Not every one of it's going to be perfect. And you've got to be ability to be able to adapt and navigate through very difficult situations. And let's talk about one of them, COVID. Who ever thought COVID would close down an entire world? Because in hospitality, never did I think, because I looked at de-risking Ivy. I said, well, if I could de-risk it by splitting and being a global business, I reduce the risk of failure. Well, never in my life did I ever think that the entire world would go through a pandemic, okay? And the entire hospitality industry got shut down in different phases across the globe, which impacted thousands of our customers that were bleeding every single day, which impacted my business that said, oh my God, within 24 hours of COVID, and here's an example of adaptability, I'd just flown in from America on a raise for $15 million and COVID hit. I escaped coming out of America after COVID had just been hit in March. I moved the entire company remote. I cut every expense out the business. I maintained every single person's employment across the globe, even though we were losing money hand over foot because people couldn't pay us. And then I still grew the business 17% on the prior year to then raise a $7.5 million pre-IPO round, because the plan was to list the company on ASX as the sixth woman for a public listed company. And when I say adapt or die, there is no alternate. You have to be nimble. You have to be flexible. You have to use that adaptability to also strive to increase your determination for success. Because all I can tell you now, I never saw it coming. Nobody in the world saw it coming. But it was the greatest test to me as a CEO to navigate through crisis and protect the most important people in my life, which were my team, to ensure safety of their families and to ensure that I could continue to fund the business. Because as most tech companies you know require enormous amounts of capital to grow, to drive market capitalization. But I tell you something, that was something that was a journey. If I did not do that, company would not be around today, hands down. Because if I did not adapt and wasn't quick, but I was determined I would come through it safely and then I would accelerate growth again. And I never, ever gave up. I was fearless in my determination. And I said, I am there for every single one of my team and I would stand by them. And I have. And I think that that is the proof of why where we are today now in 19 countries.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that affected a lot of people at the time of COVID and no one saw it coming. But there was definitely those that were proactive and there was those that were reactive across it. And lesson learned to me, I tell people, and again, this was lucky enough to be a son of migrants and a good upbringing. In bad times, plan for good. And in good times, plan for bad. And you'll find that the companies that have come out stronger, but not just companies, the households, the people that are sitting okay now, and some even stronger, are the ones that in good times are planning for bad. They know that it can't always be good times. And just like it's not always going to be bad times. So we've got to look at it. But again, if we sit on the fence and do nothing, nothing happens. So you've got to make shit happen, right?
You only have yourself to blame. You've got to, if you don't get up, stand up and do it, well, nobody's going to do it for you. So,
and there's no greater responsibility after your own kids than mouths to feed than those of your team. Okay, before we hand over to the audience, a question I love to talk to people about. Talk me through what success means to you.
Success for me is one word, freedom. Because I think my whole life I have been the slave to everybody, provider, creator. As a CEO, when you build businesses, success is not monetary. Success is different for every single person in this room today. Success may be I've just managed to get through today because I haven't had a mental breakdown. Or success today for me is I managed to feed my kids, okay? And, you know, success is different for everyone. For me, success is freedom, knowing that I put my fingerprint on the world and that I actually made a difference. That is success for me.
Yeah, I love it. Love it. We talked about it today, success in Beck's team. Beck had a workshop here with her crew, and what I shared with them was my model of success, having lived being unsuccessful. People say, but you built an amazing business. Yeah, but I was heavily overweight and I was traveling 3 weeks a month. And I've still got the videos of my kids when they were younger sending me goodnight messages to dad because I was living 3 weeks a month away. And to me, success is number one, your health, and then second, to have the money and the time to do what you want when you want, you know, and it ties into your message nicely. You know, that success means different things to different people. Everyone in this room, health is a non-negotiable, but money and time is negotiable. If you want to own the plane, you need a lot more money than flying in it. And if you don't want to fly at all, you need less money. Yeah. If you want to play golf versus playing tennis, you need a lot more time to play golf. So this is a key one I want to share from my perspective of success because, you know, we often are taught to look at role models and look at people. And then we go off and go, well, I love that person for many times for good reasons, but then we think we have to be that person or imitate that person. It's be yourself. And that's resonated very clearly, right?
You know, Phil, I think that that's a really good message because a lot of women, I mean, and if we look around the globe, there's so few female role models, okay? So when you ask the question, well, how are women meant to be the same as men? Well, the capacity of success of men versus the capacity of success of women is because there's not enough women coming through the ranks. And I think as a female founder, there's a responsibility on me that I take very seriously is wanting to help pave the way for our future generations of women. Because if some women like me who are strong, I'm a very hard taskmaster and I'm very focused on delivery and excellence. If I can't do it and break that glass ceiling, how can I show others that it's possible? Because I know I'm stronger than most and not everybody is the same and everybody has different strengths and weaknesses, but I'm a fighter, a natural born fighter, okay? And that means I'm going to give it that and more and I will push through things that most people give up on. But I have to be an example for others. And therefore, my success is everyone else's success. Because if I can show that your dream and what people have told you along the journey is impossible, is truly possible, then I've changed one person's life, okay? Because if I've done it from nothing, every single person in this room can do it because there is nothing to stop you other than your own limitations.
Yeah, no, well said. And it's what we feed our brains that holds us back most of the time. Open to the audience.
That's a very good question, Beck, because I think definitely personal branding and my CMO here, okay, Toby, who is in charge of all my marketing and from a business perspective is an absolute rock star. But I do believe personal branding is actually a really important part of building success and credibility and trust in the market. I don't actually do enough of it, okay, and probably need to get one of those really good coaches along on personal branding. I suck on social media, okay, to be completely honest. I'm so head down building businesses that, like I said, I don't necessarily like the fluff, okay? I like building solid business so that when I come out fighting, I come out with a punch because it's almost like that stealthy approach. I see a lot of women that do a lot of stuff on social media, and I know some of these women, and there's a lot of lip service, and I know the real truth behind it, and I get disappointed by the showpieces. And I think that social media can either elevate, okay, or bring you down. And I just think that personal branding does play. I need to do more of that. Obviously, when I'm talking around the globe, I do a lot of that within the industry sector. But I think that there's a lot more I can do with my brand. And I definitely think I should do more with it. But it is, you know, the one interesting thing, when you go and introduce yourself, "Hi, I'm Beck from," okay? The problem us women have is we don't identify, "I'm Lauren Hall, mother, founder, lover, fighter, investor," okay? What am I? I'm Lauren Hall, founder and CEO of Ivy. So there's your answer. I should be leading, "I'm Lauren, I'm real, I'm human, I'm first." But I put, my identity is tied to what I do. And a board member said to me one day, "Lauren, I just want you to know, Ivy is not who you are. It is what you do. The problem is, it's my child. And it's got unconditional love. And that is what ties yourself to where you are as a personal brand. So should you lead from the front, the hardest point is, well, who are you? Because judgment in the market is driven by, what have you done? How much do you earn? What do you wear? Where do you stand? How many followers you've got?" I go, "That's total bullshit." And my team know, okay, that I have a very high bullshit meter, okay? And I see through it. And all I want to do is be a great role model, but I'm going to come there and I'm going to bring it, okay? And hopefully off the back of that, it will help enhance my personal brand.
Yeah. Well said. You got a no bullshit meter. I got a no dickhead policy. We work well together. Right. It's fantastic. Question. No, they can't tell me there's no one else in this room that wants to ask a question. Here we go. Kerry.
That's a really, really good call because it's unfortunate. Okay. It really is. Because when you do a comparison of the research for CEO men and CEO women, most of the CEO women, and we'll talk about it. CEO men have come out of Ivy League, good education, huge support networks that help champion the ability to get these big roles. Female CEOs are generally come from broken homes. They've never been educated. They come out of public schools. They've either been athletes because they fought from a very young age to be good at what they do. And they've had to build their ranks up. And there's some great Carol Schwartz did some amazing research around female women that was written. The problem we have is it has to start from when women are young. The first thing is the belief in their capability. The fact is capability is everything for any role, okay, skills. But the second thing is just because you're not a tomboy doesn't mean you can't be successful. Women have incredible skills for boards. They have skills of empathy, compassion. They also can be very strong leaders, even though they're not have to be a tomboy, okay? I just preferred guns over dolls, okay? So it was just how I started at 9 years of age, and that made it a little bit difficult for me, I have you know, because I wasn't really accepted on either side, okay? Which isolates you, to be honest. But I think for advice to women who are not tomboys, set your goals. Believe in yourself. Don't give up. Don't believe the naysayers. You can do it, provided you have someone, that you have a team that supports you, okay? You have a good idea. You've done your research. You have a good team. There are lots of pieces that make you successful. But don't ever be afraid to be vulnerable as a woman, because as much as people think vulnerability is a weakness, it's actually a strength. And when you're real with your team and your people and they know that you're human, there's an incredible sense of skill and sense of leadership in that vulnerability. But don't take bullshit. End of story, because there's so much of it. And I just think that you just cannot rely that just because someone is an alpha female, they're the only ones that are successful. There's some amazing women out there, and all of you are doing incredible things in your world that you operate in. Just keep doing it better. Keep working and fighting for what you want. And that what you want may be very different to somebody else, but it doesn't mean you're not successful.
Yeah. Well said.
You know, I think it's something that's quite a soul-searching journey. I come out of a family of four women, daughters, and a very strong father. And the benchmark was set very high for me from a very young age. Unfortunately, due to the tragedy, I never really got the validation from probably the most important person in my life, and that was my father. Okay. And as a woman, you're always looking to your parents for guidance and validation because they help carve the person you become. I think for me, I'll never stop building businesses, and I will never stop giving of myself, and I'll never stop wanting to be more than I am, okay? I think that's part of the thing that I've got tattooed on my back, and that is indomitable spirit. It's that will to never give up in that fight. One day, when I get to the point of what's enough, is when I can look in reflection from all the learnings that I've had to say, well, can I have brought my children up to believe that they can be the best that they can be? Have I put my fingerprint on the world and touched enough lives? Then I will turn around and say, then I am. But I still have a little way to go.
Yeah, beautiful question. Great answer.
I have to be very honest. And I think I'm looking at David's face. Balance. I have to say, what is that? Okay. To be honest, when you're leading businesses and I think every single time when I had my children, I gave birth on Thursday, I was back at work Monday, okay? Second child, I was still doing a meeting while I was in labor, on the labor table, okay? This is, when I say balance, it didn't exist in my life. It never really has. All I can say is that I'm extremely blessed to have a husband that I have who can put up being married to someone like me. Okay, firstly, because a career woman who is an absolute workaholic and lives and breathes and eats business is difficult because he stood up and helped me manage bringing up my kids, okay, as much as running his own business. But I think you do get to a point, and I would certainly never, ever recommend to any woman do what I did, because I do have regrets, okay, that to give yourself the time to be a mother. It is probably the most beautiful, most important journey of your life. And I think that's one of the areas that I'd like to, and I have to look at reflection now, and hopefully I can be better as a grandmother. But my boys have been brought up really well, and to respect women and to really honor equality, okay, because they have a leader in me that they have had every day in their lives. I think for when you get to the age of 35 and you're looking at what do you need to do, you do have to allow yourself to do the things that provide a sense of happiness, okay? And happiness is different for everyone, and to get a better balance. And I'm trying to be better at that myself. Acknowledging that half an hour you need for yourself, whether it's going down to have your head down, taking that walk on the beach, and allow yourself just time to breathe. We don't give ourselves enough of that. We don't do enough of that as women because we juggle so many things as women, as multitaskers. But we do have to get to a point that we say, actually, we should allow ourselves that hour in the day, as much as we're not always very good at it. But balance is important, even though I suck at it, to be honest. You know, yeah, thanks. Look, I always find it an absolute privilege to come and share a little bit of my journey. And yes, I think good message from that. I need more personal branding, okay? And I need to be booked in more events, okay? But I think one of, if you could definitely help me back, okay? The one thing that I think, because I've built so many different types of businesses from manufacture, pharmaceutical, fast-moving consumable goods and technology, my passion is being a mentor and a judge and actually helping other women. I can build a business in a heartbeat, okay? And what it's most important is how do you set up a great structure around helping other women take their ideas, build an MVP, commercialize it, and then scale it. A lot of people can't see that whole journey end to end. And certainly it's one of the areas that as I can relinquish some of my responsibilities as the CEO of Ivy, because I've got this awesome team that step up to all these responsibilities that I have in Ivy, is to do more to help others. Because I think the only way to do that is to help other women be better and realizing their dreams. Because there's no way you have to take people like myself and others that have done it that can help people do it faster, learn from mistakes, and set up a road for success much faster than they could do it on their own.
Yeah. But, good. You got your first client. Well, the key, and take it, my background, strategy, marketing, branding, and as you know, Lauren, but the key there is what you said before. It's Lauren Hall, CEO, founder, CEO of Ivy, because one of my pet hates is the prefixes. Woman CEO. No, you're a CEO. You're a female. And I think if people stop leading with that classification, then it's not just women you inspire. Your inspiration and your story is not just women. And that's why we've got so many men in the audience. It's men as well, right? And vice versa. It's not man CEO. It's you're a CEO or a board member. Yeah. It's you are enough, whether you're male or you're female. And I think that sometimes it's what we don't say that has more power. It really is that they see somebody like you and they go, and women are naturally going to gravitate to it, but you're going to inspire more than just women. You're going to inspire a hell of a lot more people than women. And you know one thing I think you will do, and if you don't, you'll Jackie Chan their asses anyway, is get men to respect women more.
Yeah.
Because I think that's where you could really have a major impact on the back of your point of Lauren doing more and being more visible out that way. But I think there's a place for you to inspire men to be better. Right, to be better with females. I think that we're calling.
Happy to do that. Challenge.
Yes, challenge. Questions. We've got a couple more. We've got time for.
My first initial inclination to that question was I wouldn't mind being like the invisible man, okay, because the ability to see things that other people see that you get to witness. You know, one of the things you said was interesting is it's not what you say to other people, it's what other people say about you that really determines how you're seen in the world that you operate. But I think the superpower that if I woke up, well, the one I think I have the most is I'm pretty good at thriving in chaos, okay? Chaos is all around us. And when you can thrive in that type of environment, you can do anything. But the additional superpower I have, would like to have, it's an interesting one. I think we all have a lot of superpowers. Some shine more brightly than others. And I do think that one of the other things I suppose which would be amazing is to be able to read people quicker, okay? Because the one thing I've learned in life is know your audience. And sometimes if you don't listen or look and engage, imagine if you knew exactly what everybody was thinking and you could read their minds. I'd love that.
They made a movie about that, What Women Want. Go figure. We're still trying to work it out.
Oh, you know.
Good question.
It's a really good question. Bravehearts, I suppose, one of the biggest. I was impacted in my environment in South Africa with a very close friend of mine whose child was part victim to paedophilia and child abuse, and it happened on Christmas Day, and we were in the part of the search parties looking for this four-year-old boy, and I'd just given birth to my son, and it really, really rocked my world deeply. There is an enormous amount of child abuse and paedophilia in the world that runs right up its ranks, and we absolutely cannot do enough to help protect vulnerable young children. And not only the fact that Bravehearts are just a fantastic charity, it's also to to strive to support the fight against domestic violence. And I think COVID reflected and showed so much of that, not only in terms of mental health and all the things that just divorce went up, violence went up. And I think we can't do enough. And so I chose Bravehearts, not only just because I think they're a fantastic charity and they're doing some incredible work. My chairman on my board absolutely is the chair of Bravehearts as well, and Vanessa Garrard. And I just have aligned myself to the things that I believe are important in our values as part of our social responsibility, and Bravehearts is one of the charities we support.
Yeah, yeah. Great question, great answer. Okay, last one comes from me. When you leave the room, you want people to? All my guests get asked that one.
No, they are enough.
Love it. Ladies and gentlemen, round of applause for Lauren. You're wonderful.
Thank you.
Thanks, Val. Thanks.
Now, we've got some beautiful flowers. The flowers you can give to your husband. And there's a bottle of wine out of my cellar. Don't drop it. And there's a voucher for the coffee commune because you love coffee.
Oh, I know. Thank
now, this bottle of wine is special and has a story. Thank you, May, for all your organisation too, darling. But this bottle of wine has a story. Hang on. I'm going to tell you. I'll take these. Just don't drop the wine.
No. Okay.
Okay. So this wine is reflection. It came out of our cellar, mine and my wife's, right? Now, please don't. There's only six bottles in the country and I've drunk two of them. So now the story is my wife and I were in Silicon Valley, right? We weren't for Silicon Valley. They call it San Francisco. We were there doing some stuff around cold brew coffee, long story short. The project they told me no one could ever do was build a coffee product that you had no bacteria, no preservative, long life. Now it's everywhere, right? And we sort of pioneered it here in Australia, but we did it in San Francisco. And they knew that I was getting into wine and they said, we want to take you to something that's very, very exclusive and had an amazing story and a story of resilience. And the short version is you rock up to these gates and it's invite only and all you see is this arch doors like a cave. And when you walk into this cave, it's like something out of this world. Wow. It's got an internal waterfall. All the wine is made on premise. The wine does not leave until 4 years of aging. All the grapes are picked and put underground within 30 minutes of being picked. And the key to it, which represents events, elegance, exclusiveness, a lot of what you're doing with Ivy, was that when you do a tasting, it's like a Queen Victoria tasting table, 12 people at a time. I swear it's set like something you would never seen with food to match. They only open exclusive. They only open per bottle per visit. All the wine gets drunk by the people. That's probably how they get some high sales.
Yeah.
And I just thought when I was in the cellar and I always try and pick something out special for our guests, I thought, what's a wine that represents you, your story that you're going to enjoy? So it's a 2006 Merlot from Jarvis.
Love it.
The import cost of that bottle alone was $150 a bottle to import it.
Oh my
so
God.
It's not about the cost. It's about the moments that you enjoy with it. So
have to share it with you, Phil.
No.
Thank you, darling.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, Lauren Hall. Now, there's no rush to head out of here. If you want to come and talk to Lauren, get a photo with Lauren, I'm sure you're happy to take some photos and the rest of it. But thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We've got the wrap.
That's a wrap for today. Keep listening for more episodes of Been There and Done That. The Coffee Commune is here to help accelerate your potential. We want you to be better tomorrow than today. Until next time, you've been listening to Phil DiBella. I'm the founder and managing director of The Coffee Commune, a place where the coffee community comes to collaborate.